As you listen to this talk, I invite you to receive what is useful for you right now, and to trust that you will receive what you need in this moment in your practice, and just let go of what is not useful, because we're not all in the same place, and things that might speak to someone, it might not speak to someone else. So just, you know, receive what comes to you. So last week we had an overview of the Four Noble Truths, and we saw that the Third Noble Truth is letting go of craving, of clinging, and that the way to let go and to the end of dukkha is the fourth Noble Truth, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. So, and that's what leads to the cessation of dukkha. So I'm going to give you an overview of what is that Noble Eightfold Path. This was offered by the Buddha almost as a prescription to find relief from dukkha and to end dukkha. So as an introduction to why practice and develop in our personal lives this Eightfold Path, I want to share something from a Tibetan master called Dzigar Khyentso Rinpoche. I'm going to read from it. He says, the potential for realization is universal and present for all of us. True benefit will come from your own efforts and realization. For your efforts to bring benefit, you must take your life into your own hands and examine your mind and experience. From this point of view, nobody could be kinder to you than yourself. Nobody could have a greater effect on you or actually do more for you than yourself. The Buddha said, I have shown you the path of liberation. Now liberation depends on you. This is really true. If you don't take your life into your own hands, not even the Buddhas can make a difference. It's up to you. So, with this understanding that we all have the capacity to develop the factors that can bring us freedom, we can open to explore this Noble Eightfold Path. This is a very holistic path that the Buddha offered as a way to include every aspect of our lives, from how we are now living in the world to how we develop clarity on the cushion. With the understanding that this path is to explore, to do, to live our lives by. It is not an abstract set of ideas, but something we need to engage with as a way to be free from suffering. All the eight trainings of the path begin with the word right, which is a translation from the Pali word samma. In English, the word right implies that there is a wrong. So Gil Fronsdal, a teacher who translates from Pali, offers the translation of samma as appropriate. And it has also been translated as wise. So you can see what speaks to you, appropriate, wise, or right. So as I list the eight factors of the Noble Eightfold Path, try to sense how you receive each of them. Maybe if there is a response on the body or heart, or maybe it's something you're already familiar with, or something you're confused about, or something that creates aversion in you. Just sense how it lands in you. So the factors of the Noble Eightfold Path fall into three groups of training. The wisdom factors, which are right or appropriate view, and right or appropriate thought or intention. And then the morality or ethical factors, which are relational aspects of how we show up in the world, which are right or appropriate speech, right or appropriate action, and right or appropriate livelihood. And then comes the concentration factors, which are three: right or appropriate effort, right or appropriate concentration, and right or appropriate mindfulness. So as a way of showing how these eight factors work all together, I want to share what the Buddha said about this. So the Buddha says, in one of right view, right intention comes into being. In one of right intention, right speech comes into being. In one of right speech, right action comes into being. In one of right action, right livelihood comes into being. In one of right livelihood, right effort comes into being. In one of right effort, right mindfulness comes into being. In one of right mindfulness, right concentration comes into being. And then in how the three areas of the factors relate to each other, the Buddha said, this is morality, this is concentration, this is wisdom. Concentration, when imbued with morality, brings great fruit and profit. Wisdom, when imbued with concentration, brings great fruit and profit. The mind, imbued with wisdom, becomes completely free from the influxes. And then the relationship between wisdom and morality. Wisdom is purified by morality, and morality is purified by wisdom, just as one hand washes the other. So this is just to show you how these eight factors work all together and support each other. It's not a linear path, and it's really not something that you do one step or one training and then it's like you put a check mark, okay, I'm done with this one. They all work together and complement each other. And the Buddha called this last of the Four Noble Truths a path, with the implication that these eight trainings, steps or factors leads us somewhere, that there is a final goal and the understanding that there is an end to dukkha. And this path requires something of us. We have to walk it. No one can walk it for us. It requires being present, being here, and engaging ourselves in these different steps so that we can feel and say, yes, I can take responsibility for the life I'm living. And we can ask, how are we in relationship to the path of practice? how are we in relationship to anything we do? From washing the dishes, doing our work, or whatever it is. Step by step, by small actions we take, we can have glimpses of what it means to be free, knowing that there is an ultimate goal. René Daumal, in his book, Mount Analog, describes the balance between living fully in the moment and keeping the vision of our final destination, and how each step depends on the previous one and how it all works together to reach our destination. He says, keep your eyes fixed on the way to the top, but don't forget to look right in front of you. The last step depends on the first. Don't think you've arrived because you see the summit. Watch your footing. Be sure of the next step. But don't let that distract you from the highest goal. The first step depends on the last. So that's an overview of all of the Noble Eightfold Path and how they all work together. But now I'm going to talk to you about the first of these factors, which is right view. And as I said, it's one of the wisdom factors. And it is wisdom that helps us discern what is helpful from unhelpful. And it helps us to know what leads to stress and how we can end that. Sayadaw Teyaneja, which is a Burmese monk, describes vipassana as being aware of mind and body directly, moment to moment, with the right understanding. Putting the emphasis on the right understanding. So being mindful is about awareness with a quality of understanding what is being known. So right view has to do with how we can understand our experience. So this right view being the first step is about getting the correct orientation. Like if we look at a map and it's upside down, we're never going to orient ourselves. So it's about how we orient ourselves the correct way. And the Buddha said, just as the dawn is the forerunner and precursor of the sunrise, so right view is the forerunner and precursor of the breakthrough to the Four Noble Truths. So giving this importance to wisdom and to right view as a way of orienting us in the path. There is an ancient Chinese proverb that says, it is wisdom that is looking for wisdom. So there is something within us that has an intuitive understanding that calls us. Right view comes at the beginning because without realizing that there is dukkha in our lives and that we can do something about it, we would never be motivated to start. So right view has to do with having a vision of what is possible in our lives in terms of having some degree of freedom, of peace, or of being having the best of us, knowing that the best of us can come out. The path begins with a perspective of how we are seeing things, how we are looking at things, a way of reflecting on our experience. And then that informs our intentions and goals, our choices and actions. The Buddha invites us to look at our lives as a web of interconnectedness. So by practicing generosity, we can, for example, reflect on the gifts that we have received all through our lives and just by being born. So he invites us to see life as a web of giving and receiving, sensing what we receive, but also what we give. And understanding also that actions have consequences and that we live with the consequences of our actions. What we think and say matters. And we do what we do right now has an effect in our future. And he invites us to reflect that the only thing that we own is the result of our actions. Nothing else belongs to us. So we might have taken actions in the past for which we are suffering the results now, but we're always free in this moment to choose beneficial actions. So that's one aspect of how right view, we have the perspective of generosity and the web of interconnectedness and how our actions have consequences. But also right view refers to the understanding that dukkha has to do with identification with a self. Understanding that things are not happening are not happening to a self, to me. We have wrong view when we take everything as being personal. Right view is understanding that there are causes and conditions beyond our control. Understanding that there is no solid, singular, or permanent me makes it possible to receive or be with whatever arises in life without feeling so intimidated by our experience. What we call me is a constant process unfolding and changing. So we can reflect on how the suffering arises when we take everything as personal, as happening to me. So freedom is not about making things to be the way we want, but in shifting that perspective. And if our goal and our final destination is freedom, we can shift that perspective. And that is something that it can be something that happens in a moment-to-moment experience. You know, we sometimes have such strong identification with that perspective of who we are and identifying with a self, like that's what brings us the most suffering, when we feel that I am so and so and this is how I'm supposed to be, or I'm a mother and this is how I'm supposed to be, or this is how things are supposed to unfold, or at work I'm a video producer and this is how it's supposed to be. I'm a Dharma practitioner, and this is how it's supposed to be. So we have all these different identifications on how that sense of self, we construct that sense of self, and that is what really us a lot of the times makes us cling or grasp into the way things should be. And as I said before, in releasing and letting go, opening up that fist, even if it's moment to moment, changing that perspective is what helps us to find freedom. So that's what I wanted to share today.